the third chapter of Hilchos Eidus, the laws of testimony. This perek contains 12 halachas and continues with the concept of the laws regulating testimony regarding financial matters explicitly. Perek Shlishi, the first perek, halacha Aleph. In the earlier chapters, the Rambam explained the concept of chakira and drisha, intense examination of the witnesses. There must be specific questioning as to the actual time of their testimony, the place, and so on, which is known as chakira and drisha. The Rambam now tells us that there is a difference between the Torah law on this subject, midiraisa, and the rabbinic law. Echad din emomneis ve'echad din enefashes bedrisha ve'chakira. Both financial matters and capital offenses are the same as far as investigating the witnesses are concerned. That both chikira and drisha are required. Shenemar, as it says in Vayikra Chavdalit Pazak Chavbeis, Mishpatechot Yiyulachem, that there is one law to you regarding this. Meaning the law is the same regarding both of these cases. Aval Amru Chachamim, however, our sages said, Kadei Shalosinol Delis, Bifnei Levim, that in order that the door should not be locked, before a person wishing to borrow money, ein eidim amen srichin drisha v'chakira. Witnesses regarding a financial matter do not have to be investigated with the strict questioning of drisha v'chakira. If such intense questioning was allowed, it would be almost impossible for any two witnesses to substantiate a transaction, since it is possible always to find something they did not remember. And once they do not remember one detail, this automatically means that the testimony is invalid. If this would happen, a person would lend money and would never be able to regain it because the borrowers would take him to court, there would be chakira and drisha on the witnesses, and the borrower would not have to pay back. In that case, when someone came again to borrow money, the person wouldn't want to lend because he sees it's too difficult to regain it in court. In order to prevent this from happening, that people should be unable to borrow money, our sages establish that it should not be necessary to give such intense investigation in financial cases. Ketzad, for example, Omru ha'edim, if the witnesses say, Befonenu hilva zeh ezeh mone b'shona plenis, that this person lent the other one 100 in a certain year in our presence. So, afo pishalei kivnu esach chedesh, even though they did not specify the month in which it happened, they only said the year. And they did not specify the place in which the transaction took place. And they did not specify whether this 100 came from this type of coin or another type of coin. Nevertheless, they do some kayemis. Their testimony is still valid. Although all of these questions, the month and the place, and the exact article which is under dispute, all would be considered under the category of drisha and chakira, nevertheless, for financial matters, our sages did not require such testimony, therefore the testimony is valid. Halacha base. However, Bamed Varim Amurim, when does this apply? We shall now see that it does not apply in every financial case. When does it apply that our sages say it is not necessary to have the intense investigation of Drisha and Chakira? But he dies in a case where one has admitted in front of witnesses that he owes money. The Halvois, a case of a loan. Matones, gifts, umechireis, sales, when one sells to another and we have witnesses to the transaction. Ukiyetzabahen, and anything similar, meaning any normal financial transaction. However, there are other matters which are, first of all, uncommon, and second of all, even when they do occur, do not involve actual financial loss. And in these cases, our sages did remain by the Torah law that chakira and drisha are required. In the case of fines, we do require drisha and chakira. That a fine, for example, the double penalty which a thief must pay, and other fines, in such cases we need drisha chakira. And we don't even need to say that you need drisha chakira to give somebody lashes, which involves physical harm, and golus, to sending a person who murdered by accident, a case of manslaughter, to go to the city of refuge. And so too, if the judge sees or senses that there is some deception going on in this case, and he worries that perhaps there is some deception. So to there, it is necessary to give the intense investigation, since anyway the judge suspects that something is wrong. And in the other cases that Rambam mentioned, the main one being knas, in the case of a fine, it does not involve chesed and kis, a financial loss, and therefore it will never involve a loan, that the person will not withhold a loan because he's afraid of the chakir and drisha in the case of knas. Therefore, they left it on the law of Torah, and chakir and drisha is required. Halacha gimel. In order to properly understand this halacha, we must review what we learned at the beginning of Perek Beis regarding the difference between drisha and chakira and bedika. Bedikas are other questions which are not so strictly required by the law regarding non-essential details of the case. For example, drisha and chakira would be the essential details, when it happened and what was actually involved, whereas bedikas involve more details of the case. For example, not only what kind of coins were given, but what color were the coins, how new were the coins, not only what house did it take place in and what place, but where in the house. These would be called bedikas. Now, when it comes to a capital case, the law is that if there is contradiction in the bedikas, then the testimony is invalid. If the witnesses say they do not know to any of the bedikas, the secondary sort of questions, in such a case, their testimony is still valid. By Chakir and Drisha, however, the primary source of questioning, should they say they don't know, their testimony is automatically invalid. Should they contradict each other, they are certainly invalidated. But even should they say they don't know, their testimony is not accepted. Which is not the case of Bedikas. Should they say they do not know, their testimony is acceptable. Now the Rambam will go further and describe what is the case in financial matters. Apol pisha ein edim omenes tzrich and drisha v'chakira. Even though witnesses in financial cases do not need the intense form of questioning chakira and drisha, nevertheless imikchisho edim zeh bedrishas ei b'chakiras. If the witnesses contradict each other in the drishas or the chakiras in these primary questions, edusam b'teila, their testimony is invalidated. Although we say you don't need them, that's only to change the law that. In the case of non-financial dealings, should they omit the question and say they don't know, even then their testimony is invalid. Here, in financial matters, if they say they don't know, their testimony is valid. Should, however, they contradict each other, then their testimony is invalid. Should, however, they contradict each other in the bedikas, the secondary forms of questions, their testimony is still valid. Ketzad, for example, Echot Eimer benissen lava mimeno vasheni Eimer leiki ela be'iyer. One witness says that he borrowed the money in the month of Nisan, and the second one says no, it was in Iyar. Which month it took place in is included under the primary sorts of questionings, Chakir and Drisha. Or the contradiction was in the matter of the place where it happened. Oisha Omer Echot Birushalayim vasheni Eimer leiki ela be'lud hayinu. Well, the first witness said the transaction took place in Jerusalem. And the second one says that's not true, it took place in Lud. We were all together there. Edusam b'teila. Their testimony is invalidated, since they have contradicted each other in the bedikas. Should they say they don't know where it took place, it would be valid, but the contradiction invalidates the testimony. V'keinim omara echad chavi shel yayin hilvahu. And so too, if one witness says that he lent him a barrel of wine, v'sheini shel shemen hoyisa, the second one says it was a barrel of oil, edusam b'teila. So too, over there, the testimony is invalid. Sharechishu b'drisha, because this is called drisha, that although it is not the time or the place, it involves the object itself which was being loaned, and since one says oil and the other one says wine, this is considered drisha and considered contradiction, and therefore they are invalid. If, however, one witness says it was dark money, meaning they agree on the coin, but it matters, what they're disagreeing about is the color of the coin, how worn was the coin. New coins are shiny and old coins are dark. And the second one says, no, it was a white one, it was new. Or zeh oimer bedyeita hal yeino hoyu keshilvahu. One witness says that they were on the upper floor of the building when they borrowed money. Hashena oimer bedyeita tachteino hoyu. And the second one says no, they were on the bottom floor when they borrowed money. Edusam kayemis. In this case, their testimony is still valid. Since they have only contradicted each other in bedikas, their testimony is valid. And afilo omar echon mona hilvahu. Vasheni Eimer Masayim, and even if one witness says he borrowed 100, and the second one says, no, he borrowed 200. Even this is not called complete contradiction. Chayiv L'shalei Mona, he is required to pay back the 100. Sheyesh Bachlal Masayim Mona. Because 200 includes 100. So it turns out that there is not a complete contradiction in their testimonies. Even though the amount would be called, will come under the category of drisha. The primary importance is how much money was actually borrowed here. However, since both of them agree that 100 was borrowed, and only one of them says that the other 100 was borrowed, he can therefore collect the 100 since Bachlal Masayim Mona. He included 100 in his testimony of 2, and therefore 100 he can collect. And so too, if one witness says that he is holding the value of a barrel of wine, enough money to pay for a barrel of wine, and the other witness says no, that he is holding enough money for a barrel of oil, he must pay back whichever is less, the value of a barrel of wine or the value of a barrel of oil. Since yesh b'chlal masayim mana, all they are testifying to is the amount of money, not to whether it was actually a barrel of wine or a barrel of oil. Therefore, it is also considered b'chal masayim mana. If, for example, the barrel of oil is cheaper than the barrel of wine, when he said a barrel of wine, he included the price of a barrel of oil. Therefore, there's no contradiction. And so to any similar case, where there is not clear contradiction in chkira and drisha, the testimony is still valid. Halacha dalet. In this halacha, the Rambam describes the whole source, how it is that we can accept testimony of witnesses who have merely signed a document. Where do we get this idea that signing a document is enough? Din teira, she'ein makablin edus leibedin en momenes for leibedin en afashes, ela mipia edim. The law of the Torah is that we can only accept testimony from the witnesses themselves, from their mouths. And this applies both to financial cases and to capital cases. Shenamar, it says in Devarim Yudzayim Posik Vav, Al Pi Shnayim Edim, literally according to the mouths of two witnesses. And this, our sages explains, means Mipihem V'Loi Miksav Yodam, literally from their mouths and not from the writing of their hands. Writing their testimony is insufficient according to the Torah. It must be Al Pi Shnayim Edim according to their verbal testimony. However, it is again by rabbinic decree that we decide the law in financial cases even on testimony which is given in a document. And even if the witnesses are no longer alive, even in such a case, we rely on what they wrote. Why do we rely on the written testimony if the pasuk says al pishnayim edim? Again, the reasoning is kadesh l'sinol delas bifnei levin, in order that you should not lock the door before the borrowers. That if the lenders see that verbal testimony is always required, someone will borrow money, wait for the person to die, or go to another place where the witnesses will be unable to testify, and he will get out of paying the money, and thereafter the prospective lenders will be reluctant to lend. In order to prevent this situation, they establish that any document should be acceptable by rabbinic decree in financial cases. However, you, however, cannot judge any case of knas, any case of a fine, according to testimony which is in a document. Because in such a case, as we mentioned in the previous halachas, you don't have to worry that in a case of knas, because of an inability to collect a fine, one will be reluctant thereafter to lend any money whatsoever. The whole idea of lo sino delos bifnei levin does not apply to a knas. And certainly in the case of giving lashes or sending someone into exile in a city of refuge, certainly it must be literally from their mouths, from their verbal testimony, and not from their written testimony. It is insufficient to give written testimony, an affidavit, so to speak, in order to make someone chayav knas, makos, or golos. Halacha hei. Kol eish nechkara heidusa bebezdin, any witness who has had his testimony investigated by the court, bein bedinei momenes, bein bedinei nefashes, regardless of whether it is in a financial case or a capital case, ein yochel lachzer bei, he is not allowed to retract his testimony. Ketzer, how is this? Amar muto hayisi. Let's say he says that I was mistaken. The first time I testified, I made a mistake. Or he says, Shegig hoyisi, that also I made an unintentional error, meaning apparently that he forgot something. V'nizkarti she'ena davar kein, and now I remember it was not like I testified the first time. Or he says, lafachte osisi, that I testified in such a way because I was afraid of him, and therefore I testified falsely. Ein shamingly, we do not listen to him, afilu nosan tam ledvarav, even if he gives a reason for why he behaved in such a way, he gives a rational explanation for what he did, nevertheless we still do not accept it. And so too he cannot add onto his testimony any condition. For example, he originally testified that Reuben sold Shimon a field. And later on he changes and he says, well, Reuben sold Shimon the field, but it was upon condition that Shimon do something else. And only if Shimon does this will the sale be a valid sale. He is not allowed to add on later on such a tanai, such a condition. The general principle is called dvarim sheyemer ha'eid, acha shenechkara eidusei, anything which the witness might say after his testimony has already been examined, sheyavu miklolam bitul ha'eidus oy hasafas tanai bo, that as a result will come a nullification of his original testimony or adding a condition to his original testimony, ein shaming lo, we do not listen to him. Once his testimony has been investigated and cleared in Bezdin, we do not accept any other statements which would change this. To properly understand the following halacha, we need a little introduction. A document must be validated, it needs kiyum. In other words, one must validate the signatures on the document to ensure that they have not been forged. If one is unable to do that, the person who is said to have owed the money could always claim that it was a forged document. Therefore, there must be a kiyum, a validation of the shtar, of the document. This may be done in several ways. First of all, the original witnesses can come to court and testify that this is their signature and what they said there actually happened. If you do not have the witnesses, you could get someone that recognizes their signature and testify that this is their signature. And this would also be enough for kiyum. And so too, a third way, if you have another document which was already makuyim, was already validated and checked out by a valid court, and you compare that signature with the present signature, this is another way of validating the signatures. And then the shtar is makuyim. In the following halacha, we will see a differentiation made between if we have to depend on these witnesses to testify that it's their signature and thereby validate the shtar, or if we could even validate it without their testimony. Halacha vav. Eidim achsumim al ashtar, witnesses who have signed on a document, hareze kemisha nechkara eidusam bebezdin. It is considered as if their testimony has already been examined by the court, vein yecheilin lachzer behem, and therefore they are unable to change their mind. They are unable, prohibited, to change. As mentioned in Halacha Hey, that once nechkara eidusam bebezdin, they are prohibited from changing their minds. However, b'med dvarim amurim, when does this apply? That the testimony in this document is considered as if it has been checked out in court, when it would be possible to validate this document without relying on them. Kugain, for example, that there are other witnesses who can testify that this is their signature, it's their handwriting. Or a sample of their handwriting is available from some other place where it has already been makuyim. And therefore, we are not dependent on that. And since we are not dependent on their testimony to validate the shtar is valid without them. Therefore, they do not have the right to come later on and say that what they signed on was not actually proper, that there was another condition added to it, or things were a little different than it says there. Since we do not rely on them anyway, the document is valid and is considered shenech k'rei dusam bezdin. Aval im ef shelakayim es hashtar. If, however, we should be unable to validate the document without them, va'amru, and the witnesses say, k'sav yodeinu huzeh, that this is our handwriting. Aval anusim hayinu, but we were forced to do this. Or katanim hayinu, or we were minors, and therefore prohibited from signing. or Krevim Hayinu, or we were related at the time, or Mutim Hayinu, we were mistaken at the time. In any of these cases, although normally we would not accept such a claim, because it's changing or invalidating what they previously testified to, Hari Elu Nemanim V'yiftel Ashtar. In any of these cases, they are believed and the document is nullified. Why? Because since in this case the document has no validity unless you can be makayim the shtar, unless you can validate its authenticity and validate their signatures. And over here you cannot validate their signatures without their own participation. So the principle is hapesha osur hu hapesha hitter. The same mouth which made the prohibition, the same mouth loosens the prohibition. In other words, since they are the ones that make the document valid, and these signatures valid in the first place, you also have to believe them to say they were forced or they were minors and so on. Therefore, the only time we say that the document is valid, as if it has been checked out in Beis Din, is only when we are able to validate the shtar without their participation. Halacha Zayin. Amru psula eidus hayinu ba'aveda. Let's say the witnesses say that we were invalid to testify because we did a sin. Oishreichad lakachnu al eiduzu. Or that we were bribed to testify in such a way. The law is we do not believe them to say such a thing and thereby invalidate their testimony. The principle is that we do not allow or do not believe a person to make himself be considered a Rasha, a wicked person, until we have witnesses that can testify that he is a Rasha as a result of his wicked actions. Rashi gives the explanation that why do we not believe a person to make himself a Rasha? Because Adam kara veitzel atzme, a person is considered his own closest relative. And relatives are invalid to testify. If a relative is not allowed to testify about him, certainly he is not allowed to testify about himself. Therefore, we cannot believe him. And the testimony remains valid even though he says he was bribed or wicked at the time. The Kainim Amru, so too, if they say, Amono Hoyudvarenu, that our words were on Ashtar Amona. Ashtar Amona is a document which was written, although no loan has taken place. The borrower writes a document, and he gives it to the lender, so there should be ready, whenever the lender decides to give him the money, then he will have the Ashtar, the document, already. And the law is that witnesses are not allowed to sign on Ashtar Amona. They can only sign the document if they know that the transaction has taken place. Therefore, if they say that it was a shtar amana that they signed on ein amanim, they are not believed. Shameid al shtar amana kameid b'sheker. A person that testifies on a shtar amana is just like he has testified falsely. So when the witnesses say that they have signed on a shtar amana, they're saying that they gave false testimony. We cannot believe this. Therefore, the document remains valid. Halacha ches. However, sometimes the witnesses are believed to invalidate the document. Amru ha'edim, if the witnesses say, Ishtar mecher zeh, meidon nimsera lonu alav, that this document regarding the sale, or meidah, a declaration of duress was given to us by the seller, that he informed us and made a declaration that you should be witnesses, that later on, when I have you sign this document of mecher that I am selling it, you should know that I am being forced to do it and it's invalid. Should later on the witnesses say that, in this case, even though we might be able to validate their signatures from some other source, nevertheless, they are believed. As the commentaries explain that in such a case, they are not invalidating their previous testimony which they gave on the document. Really, since they were given a meidah, a declaration of duress, before this transaction took place, they would be allowed to write down their testimony of what they saw previously. If the meidah was given on the first of the month, and the sale took place the second day of the month, they are testifying on what happened the first, not on what happened on the second. Therefore, they are not invalidating the second, they are just telling the testimony which happened in the first day of the month, which automatically invalidates the second, because there was a declaration of duress. Therefore, they are believed and they are not considered to be changing their previous testimony. Halacha tes. Amru, if the witnesses said, Al tanai hayushtar zeh, that this document we signed was really of a deal, which was done with a condition. So do we believe them to add the condition onto to what is written in the document? Similar to what we mentioned in Halacha Hey, in verbal testimony. What is the law? If we have their handwriting from another source, in other words, we can validate this document without them, ain't them money. We do not believe them because their new testimony regarding the condition will change what is written in the document. However, v'imein ashtar miskayim elami pihem nemonim. If, however, we cannot validate this document except from their own testimony, through their saying that they are the witnesses signed, nemonim, they are believed. As we mentioned previously, since it is their testimony now which is making this a valid document, we believe them also to say that there was a condition involved. Therefore, va'emer, the judge says, labali hadin, to the ones that bought the land, kaimu hatanai uvayu lodun, fulfill this condition which is now being testified about, and then you, and then later on, if necessary, you will have to come into judgment. Meaning, apparently, that first you have to fulfill the Tanai, and if you don't get the land from him, then come to judgment, and we will give you the land. If even after fulfilling the condition, he still does not give it to you, then come to judgment, and we will give it to you. Halacha Yud. Let's say, however, there is disagreement between the witnesses on this point. Omer echad mina edim al tanai hoyudat dvarim. One of the witnesses says that this deal was done with a condition, and we depend on him to validate his signature, therefore we believe him to say there was a condition. Vasheni eimer lo yisham tanai. The second witness, however, says that there was no such condition involved. So the first witness says that the document as it is written is invalid since the condition has not been fulfilled. The second one, however, says that it is valid as written. There was no condition. The law is that you do have one valid witness over here. And it's just like you have one witness testifying, which as we mentioned many times previously in the Rambam, that if one witness testifies, this is sufficient to make the other party involved take an oath, a shvua d'araisa. And so too over here. Halacha Yud Aleph. Even in monetary matters, we only accept testimony in the presence of the other litigant. However, if, however, this litigant was sick, or the witnesses are requesting that they have to go away to a far-off country, and the judge is sent for this litigant and he did not come. In this case, either of these cases, these judges can accept testimony even not in his presence. However, when do the judges even have to wait for him? When it is verbal testimony being offered. If, however, the testimony is in a document, the court validates their signatures even not in the presence of the other litigant. Even if he is standing there screaming that it's a forged document, they're false witnesses or invalid to testify, we don't listen to him. We validate their signatures, and if later on he has some proof to invalidate it, he will later be able to present such testimony. Now the final halacha, halacha Yud Beis. Kol mi sheyesh l'raya be'edim metapel be'edim asher yaviim lebezdin. Anyone that has a proof with witnesses, he must take care of the witnesses until he brings them to court. However, v'inyodu bezdin shebaldin hayalam v'ton hatevei ashehidim ispachti mi baldin sheyaveo v'yoidu lei. If, however, he complains that since his opponent is very strong and the witnesses are afraid to testify in his presence, the court forces the strong person, the opponent, to bring the witnesses. So to any similar cases when a strong person is involved, we force him to bring the witnesses.